Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, and welcome to a very special midweek episode of Slate Money COVID. This is a Wednesday short episode just to try and stay on top of all of the crazy. I'm Felix Salmon of Axios. I'm here with Emily Peck of HuffPost.
Hello.
I'm here with Anna Szymanski of Breaking Views.
Hello.
We're going to talk about fiscal policy. We're going to talk about monetary policy. We're going to talk about helicopter drops. We're going to talk about bailouts. All of that in a single segment. And then back for our regular full-length episode on Saturday.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Most of you listening right now are probably multitasking. Yep, while you're listening, you're probably also driving, cleaning, exercising, or maybe even grocery shopping. But if you're not some kind of moving vehicle, there's something else you can be doing right now: getting an auto quote from Progressive Insurance. It's easy, and you could save money by doing it right from your phone. Drivers who save by switching to Progressive save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Discounts for having multiple vehicles on your policy, being a homeowner, and more. So, just like your favorite podcast, Progressive will be with you 24/7, 365 days a year, so you're protected no matter what. Multitask right now. Quote your car insurance at progressive.com to join over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Okay, so this is going to be a super fast turnaround thing. So we can actually, for the first time ever on Slate Money, talk about, oh my God, what are the markets doing today? And the today means today. As of today, which is Wednesday, the stonks are down, the bonds are down, everything is down, which means this is something which we've been seeing for the past few sessions, Anna, that like we are back to positive correlations between stocks and bonds. Like when the stocks go down, the bonds also go down. It's not like that flight to quality that we used to see at the beginning of this crisis when the stocks would go down and the bonds would go up.
Right. Partly what we're seeing is that people really want cash. Like essentially right now, people are selling off anything to get cash. And one of the things you often see in a crisis is that it's not only like the dodgier things that sell off, it's actually the higher quality things. Because if you have to meet a margin call, you're going to sell whatever you can that can get a good price. That's why often you'll see like gold will sell off. You'll be like, why is gold selling off? In theory, that should be doing well. So that's obviously one thing you're seeing.
So let me stop you right there and just ask you, firstly, when you're talking about margin calls, is there a bunch of leverage in this market? Are there a bunch of like people who are, you know, who are short or who are long and having to make margin calls or whatever it is? Like, is that a dynamic? Because I kind of get the impression that really this is just a crazy repricing rather than a sort of technical thing.
I think it's a combination of both. I mean, you're right that part of it is also just everybody's rebalancing. Anything with even a little bit of risk, everybody's fleeing from. So that's definitely a big part of it. But you also always have the technical side. Like there's always a significant amount of leverage. It's not the same thing as 2008. Like this is not the same thing as 2008. However, that doesn't mean you don't have a lot of people who need to raise cash.
I was going to say, isn't the other piece of this, because I was having trouble understanding it and then it kind of clicked in. Like you said, everyone needs cash, especially businesses who don't have money coming in. So they're going and tapping lines of credit they hadn't been using before. And then the banks are giving them the cash and then the banks don't have the cash. And essentially like a company like Boeing, for example, is facing a real cash crunch. Like that's like adding pressure to the system?
So the banks actually do have the cash. This is the first thing that happened, was that the Fed came in, and the Fed basically went along to the banks and said, go ahead and lend as much as you can to as many people as you can, as cheaply as you can. We're not going to worry about your capital ratios very much. We're not going to be regulating, like, is this good lending or bad lending? We are just going to make it as easy as possible for you to lend out money. So the, you know, obviously, if I'm a bank, if I'm one of Boeing's banks, I'm going to worry that there's going to be a default because Boeing might not be able to pay me back. But, you know, assuming that Boeing still has a positive valuation, I can still lend to Boeing as a bank, and I'm basically okay on that front. That's the Fed side of things. And, you know, then on top of that, you have the fiscal side of things where Boeing and everyone else is going up to the government and saying, I want a bailout, and we can talk about that if we want to.
Okay. Yeah. But basically everyone needs cash, and everyone's trying to get it in different ways.
And that bit of the companies needing cash does not explain what Anna was talking about, which was the price of gold going down or stock market going down or something like that, because the companies don't have a massive stock portfolio or gold portfolio that they liquidate when they need cash.
It's just that this is...
Well, those people are selling what they own to get the cash because they don't want to be in any kind of risky anything. They just want money.
I think if you're a small business owner, perhaps, or more to the point, if you're someone who just got laid off, then you're like, I don't need a bunch of stocks for the long term. I need money for the short term. And so you sell stuff. I'm not sure how much that really explains the sell-off, though. One thing I do think that explains what's going on in the bond market, especially the treasury bond market, is that when everything was monetary, when it was the Fed coming in and injecting trillions of dollars of new liquidity into the market, that naturally brought interest rates down. The cost of money goes down when the amount of money goes up. And now what we're seeing is much more expectations of a big fiscal response, like the government actually spending lots of money, like $1 trillion or more. And if the government spends an extra $1 trillion, it's going to have to borrow that $1 trillion. And at some point, the amount of money that the government borrows is, there is a sort of constraint of how much people are going to be willing to lend or how much interest they're going to require in order to lend. And there's even possibly a tiny little hope that if we inject this much money into the economy directly from the government, it might cause inflation. And so we're seeing the 10-year bond go back over like 1.5%. It was less than 0.5% this time last week. And that could possibly be like a tiny little healthy sign that this could be what the economy needed to get some inflation back.
I mean, that's all possible, although I do think a lot of this is not quite that rational and is just a combination of panic and unwinding positions. Because you are seeing weird things in the market in terms of like the difference between treasuries and cash, the difference between one type of treasury and a different type of treasury. And a lot of this was because before we went into this crisis, you had a lot of large funds that were kind of trying to play off that difference between like on the run and off the run treasuries.
Oh my God, so you're reminding me of LTCM. That was their big trade.
It's true. It's totally true. It's exactly right. It's exactly right. Everything that's old is new again. So you're getting just a lot of factors happening here. And I think also we'll probably see, until we start to see the actual real crisis, the health crisis, until you start to see the U.S. getting a handle on that, I bet every day you're going to just get these massive swings back and forth because there's just no sense of a bottom. Everybody's just repositioning. Whatever happens one day, then you're going to have people reacting to that significantly the next day. So I don't know how much reason you can draw from what we're actually seeing.
One question I do have is, why does the stock market go up a lot? Like, we've had a couple of days where the stock market has gone up by like 6% or 10% or some like massive amount, which doesn't really fit with the idea of everyone's wanting cash and is panic selling. So what explains the days when we get massive up days?
It can be a combination of a lot of things. I mean, it can be repositioning in your like portfolios. If your equity portfolio dropped down in value quite significantly, and so then you actually are going to respond and you're going to purchase more equities. It can be also things like short covering. It can also be if you, in theory, if I was going to buy a stock at 80, why wouldn't I buy it at 60? You know, in theory, that's how the market should react.
I guess what I'm wondering is, like, in a normal market, you get all of these dynamics. Some people are wanting to raise cash. Other people are wanting to, you know, short cover or buy when it's low or whatever. And those people trade with each other and you have efficient price discovery and you kind of work out what things are worth. And in this market, like, one thing seems to happen one day and then the opposite thing seems to happen the next day. And I don't understand, like, what determines, like, which day is which.
I mean, that's a very, very good question. I mean, I would say, like anything here, it's just a combination of multiple things. You have technicals, you have, and also some actual news. Like, it is possible that when you get certain bits of news, like, I do think the market responded somewhat well yesterday, by which I mean Tuesday, that the Fed came and said that they were going to go into the commercial paper market, because that had been a really big concern, that had been jamming up. And so I do think that there was some actual positive response to that. Now, obviously, the next day, we're seeing, again, a negative response. And so is that because of any other news we heard, or is that just because certain positions that people took yesterday then caused them to have to, then caused them or their counterparties or someone else to have to take another position? When you get into these crises, you just tend to get these weird volatility spikes. And it almost always happens in every crisis for a certain period of time. It's just up and down, up and down. And there's not a lot of reason behind it.
What, one thing which is certainly true is that there's just way more known unknowns than there normally are in the market.
Right.
Not and both on the government side and on the epidemiological side. We have no idea how bad this medical crisis is going to get. And we also have no idea, like, you know, what the fiscal response is going to be. We still don't really know, for instance, whether this idea of just sending everyone $1,000, or maybe it's $2,000, or maybe it's $3,000. And these are real amounts of money. Every $1,000 that you send someone is $250 billion. And, you know, even in 2020, like, $250 billion is a lot of money. And so these massive fiscal things are so up in the air right now that the market, I think, rationally can be just about anywhere. So I think you're right that there's just a massive amount of unknowns, and people are doing their best to try and position themselves to something which they just have no idea what it's going to be. There aren't a lot of, you know, crystal balls out there.
No, exactly.
Right. I think the stimulus package is going to be really, really important and key to all of this in determining what it looks like. And I don't know if I'll regret saying this, but I was sort of heartened yesterday when Mnuchin said they would spend $1 trillion on a stimulus package, because it seems like the thing to do right now is to throw money at this problem and see what works. Like, pull out all the stops, like, do whatever it takes, send out the checks, beef up unemployment insurance, beef up food stamps, tell people that it's okay if they miss a mortgage payment, tell landlords not to evict people, like, do all the things. Like, you can't do too much.
No, I think you're totally right, because I mean, I think even you know, if I'll be like the unethical person over here, doesn't care about people and just cares about markets, which isn't true, but like right now we have two major issues. We have an issue with the plumbing of the market that we need to make sure remains smooth, and then we have the demand issue. And it's a little bit easier for the Fed to affect the first problem, to like just kind of make sure that things continue to run effectively as much as they can. The second one's harder, and the second one requires a fiscal reaction. And if you don't get that, if you all of a sudden have massive layoffs, like that's the kind of thing that creates something even significantly more than we had in the, you know, the Great Recession. So I agree. Like, both of these are really, really important.
And it's starting to get really scary. Like, I think Marriott this week announced like big layoffs, but I think there's some confusion about the way they're structuring them. So it's not that people are getting fired, it's that they're getting furloughed. And then the question is, can they get unemployment insurance? And I think state officials and federal officials need to make sure they can, like, right away. otherwise be a disaster.
Right. And this is the thing that concerns me, is that if you just do a helicopter drop and give everyone $1,000, that really doesn't help the Marriott employees who have just been laid off. And it does help me, and I don't really need, like, I am actually already getting more than $1,000 just in terms of the spending I'm not doing. Like, I'm stuck at home. There's a bunch of spending that I would normally do, going out to restaurants and plays and all the rest of it. And I'm not making that spending and travel. And so long as I'm not traveling and not going out to plays and not going out to restaurants and not going out to movies, like, that's worth more than $1,000 to me right there in terms of savings. If you give me $1,000, I'm like, that's great. That's just going to go over and above the $1,000 I've already saved on not going out. So I'm not the best person to give this
to. Yeah, I mean, the $1,000 is not for you.
Exactly.
That's not
for
you.
Like, I don't like, on some level, I don't like the idea of giving everyone $1,000. I really do like the idea, insofar as we can, of trying to target the fiscal response at the people who really need it, the people who are being laid off, the people, you know, where the economic hardship is hardest, the retailers and all of that kind of thing. And it's logistically much more difficult to do that, but it makes a huge amount of sense to me, while at the same time trying very hard not to bail out the massive corporations. You know, I have no sympathy at all for, bailing out airlines, casinos, even the hotel groups like Marriott itself. Like, you know, if you buy equity in those companies, you take a bunch of risk. This is a little tail risk, which has turned up. The equity can go to zero. You will be okay. And we don't need to support those share prices, which is essentially what a bailout is for those companies. Like, support their employees, but not the parent corporation.
But yeah, it's hard to do one without doing
that. Is there a way you can you structure it? I mean, at the end, like, I'm not a fan of companies or corporations at all, but like, if you let the airlines, if you let Boeing go under, that's like tens and hundreds of thousands of jobs. So you have to do something to kind of, I can't believe I'm saying this, but you do have to kind of prop up those companies right now while they're not seeing any business. And then maybe the thing to do is like force them to agree to certain concessions as part of your bailout. Like the government did with the auto bailout, right? They put like fuel economy regulations in place.
Right. So, but let's be clear about this, is that when the government did the auto bailout, it did it in the form of a prepackaged bankruptcy. The equity basically went to zero. You're not bailing out the shareholders. There's a huge difference between bailing out the company's shareholders on the one hand and making sure that the company can keep on operating on the other hand. If a bunch of shareholders lose money, and even if a bunch of bondholders lose money, that's okay so long as the company itself continues to operate. And I'm not saying that these companies shouldn't continue to operate. And I'm just saying that you want to be very careful in how you're targeting any kind of bailout cash to ensure that it's not going to shareholders, it's not going to bondholders, and it is going ultimately to employees.
That's right.
I agree with that. And I do think a lot of, like, look, you're going to have some companies, like, I mean, Boeing will get bailed out. Boeing is a disproportionate part of our economy. They also have all these defense contracts. So Boeing will be taken care of. There's just no way they won't. But for a lot of companies that aren't like the airlines or aren't maybe hotels, or they're basically, I think we'll need more, they'll need bridge loans. Because it's not that the companies are themselves like these insolvent enterprises. They're going to need money to get through a very rough period of time. And I do think that is a place where the government can step in. Because, you know, we need right now to do what we can to keep the economy going. I mean, I agree. We don't want to just kind of help shareholders who bought it too high of a price. I mean, that's not what the government should be doing. But what we do want to do is to kind of lower panic, keep things. Because what the government, what the Fed is trying to do is not trying to do anything about the health panic. They can't. They're just trying to keep the economy functioning, because when trying to fight a health crisis, the last thing you need is for your economy to be falling apart.
I guess we'll talk about this more on Saturday, right, guys?
Right. We will come back and revisit this on Saturday. I do believe there will be more coronavirus talk in our regular episode.
I'm just going to talk about Lebanon. You know, like, we're just like
and we will probably zoom it out. So come back on Saturday for more Slate Money, a full-length regular episode where we might even talk about the rest of the planet as well.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.